And thank you. You've taken pledges from your brother. What's a pledge? You loan me money and leave me security, right? And so sometimes they'd even take their garments and everything. Well, I don't have anything to leave as security. Well, just give me your overcoat and everything. Give me that precious garment that you've got. And you ought to trust your brethren is the kind of thing that he had in mind. And when people are traveling and they need water to drink, Job, you will not even be so kind, verse 7, as to give water to drink. You can read verse 8 on your own. But when you get to verse 9, you have sent widows away empty. Job, you are a sinner. And Job is just continually saying, no, I've not done anything wrong. I don't understand what's going on. And I suspect every one of us has been in that situation, have we not? When the world tumbles in, we think, what did I do to bring this on myself? And it's not that I've done something to bring this on to myself. Job's just saying, I don't know what's going on. And we'll read the statement and all this. Job did not offend God. When you get to the end of the book, God says what Job said is true. It's true, Job. You can't figure out what's happening. And look down. He says, "You have sent widows away empty." And I highlighted the word "therefore" because he's really ready to hit him. Therefore, snares are all around you, and sudden fear troubles you. And then in verse 13, he says, "Job, you are the one who are saying, what does God know?" Now, that's not what Job has said, but that's what his friend, that's what Eliphaz has said about you. Anybody ever misrepresent what you said and twisted it and distorted it? Yeah. And these are the kinds of friends that Job has. And he says, it's impossible for you to be able to talk to God this way because the reason you're suffering is because of your own sin. Look at down verse 21. Now, Job, it's time for you to get to know the Lord Jesus, or not the Lord Jesus, but time for you to get to know the Lord. Acquaint yourself with Him and be at peace, and thereby good will come upon you. And I said before, whenever we were talking about all of this, the last verse in the chapters, He will even deliver one who is not innocent. Yes, He will be delivered to you by the purity of your hands. You need to understand, Job, even though you're not innocent, He still delivers you. And there's an element of truth in that, but this is as accusatory as can be. And so chapter 22 is Eliphaz's statement to him. And let's get to chapter 23 and look at chapter 23. Look at the first five verses. And on the screen we've got, he longs to see God. And look in verse 3. Job, you long to see God? Oh, that I might know where I might find Him, that I might come to His throne, to His seat. I would present my case before Him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would know the words which He would answer me and understand what He would say to me. Job's not accusing God. He's just saying, I don't know what's going on. If I could just talk to God and present my case face to face, then I'd like to hear what He's saying about me. I've heard, friends, what you have said about me, but that is of no use. In verse 6 through 9, he says, but God, I just cannot find God. Look how he says in verse 8, look, I go forward, guess what? He's not there. I go backwards, and I can't see Him. When He works on the left hand, I cannot behold Him. When he turns to the right hand, I cannot see Him. That's amazing. Job says that I just can't find God. And I've been pleading my case before God, and God will not answer me at all. And that's where we are, isn't it? You know, I mean, why is this happening to me? And I think the natural response we have when there's adversity is to just say, how can there be a God with all of these things happening in my life? And verse 10, he says, He knows the way that I take. When He has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. Now, Job, beginning in verse 10, says, but I don't know of any wrong that I've done. Not that I'm sinlessly perfect, but it's not that I've done some terrible, wretched kind of thing, and therefore I've lost every earthly possession, lost all of my children, and I'm just a beggar sitting beside the road, as it were, without even a house in which to live. And Job says, God knows what I'm doing, and when He tests me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot has held fast to His steps, and I have kept His way and not turned aside. Is he concerned? Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to live right, and I can't handle it. Look at verse 12. I have not departed from the commandments of his lips. Verse 13, he is unique, and who can make him change? And whatever his soul's desire, that he does. God is sovereign. But I can't figure out what's going on. And his friend said, you know that widow that was in need? And you know that people you took the man's garment, wouldn't give it back to him, the pledge that you took? And you know how later they'll get a little even rougher, how you committed adultery? We'll see this. It's going to get worse. Sometimes in an argument, people talk gently to you at first, but the more they talk, the more vicious they become. And these guys have three shots at Job. And so Job says, you know my response? Look at the word therefore. I look for the word therefore in the text. It's a transitional thing. It helps you understand what is before the word therefore. And every time you see the word therefore, you ask the question, what's it there for? What's he saying this? And he said, I'm innocent. But God is sovereign, and he said, therefore I'm terrified at his presence. When I consider this, I'm afraid of him. For God has made my heart weak, and the Almighty terrifies me, because I was not cut off from the presence of darkness, and he did not hide deep darkness from my face. I mean, the pits. And I cannot handle the things that are happening in my life. And you get to the next chapter, and we hardly made even a division at all in the notes that we've got on the screen. Chapter 24, he says, here are wicked people. Here's what wicked people do. Some remove landmarks. What's that? Is what? Stealing property. When you've had your house surveyed somewhere, somebody drove down a little brash a peg, and the surveyors did, and it's a point they can measure from. Now, in biblical times, it might be a stone that you would put that would mark the edge of your property. And he says, here's what wicked people do. They remove landmarks, and they seize flocks violently and feed on them. Job, how'd you get your flocks? I didn't do it that way. They drive away the donkey of the father. See, it's orphans, and you go over there and you steal their animals. They push the needy off the road. I found that interesting. I think it was driving a car. And that's not what he's talking about. But, you know, you don't even deserve to travel on my road. I mean, that idea. And looking down at verse 6, they gather their fodder in the field and glean in the vineyards of the wicked. That's what evil people do. And so he just says, look at verse 9. Here's a baby that has no father, has a mother, and they go and they snatch the fatherless from the breast and take a pledge from the poor. They cause the poor to go naked without clothing, and they take away the sheaves from the hungry, gathering in all of that wheat out in that field, and you've put a sheaf together, and lo and behold, that poor person that's worked real hard to gather that sheaf of wheat together, bundle it together. The wicked go over there, and so what happens? Does God punish them? He says, the dying groan in the city, I'm reading verse 12, and the souls of the wounded cry out, yet God does not charge them with wrong. Is that true? Do wicked people get away with things in America? Had your car repaired lately? You understand? I mean, I remember in New Zealand, one of the missionaries had his car broken. He took it in, and the mechanic was just shaking his head over it. And Eddie said, what's it going to take to fix that? And he said, pick a number and double it. I thought that was a real interesting, it's a British type humor, but that, you know, you just pick a number and it'll be twice what you expect. And that it's that sort of thing. The murder arises, verse 14, he arises with the light, he kills the poor. Verse 15, the eyes of the adulterer waits for the twilight, saying, no eye will see me, and he disguises his face and therefore goes out and commits any sins that he wants. In the darkness they break into houses, which they mark for themselves in the daytime, they do not know the light. In the daylight, they go around, well, which house shall we break into tonight? And so Job says, I know what sin is. And yet, God does not charge them with wrong. You want to modify that? Is God aware of the wrong that evil men do? Yeah, God will bring every secret thing into judgment. The last verse of Ecclesiastes 12. We know verse 13, fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole of man. And then he says, for God will bring every secret thing into judgment, whether it's good or evil. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that shall he also reap. But Job is in the midst of all of this adversity that is in his life. And he says, well, look down. Man, we got so much to cover. He says, as drought and heat consume the snow waters, the grave consumes those who have sinned. The womb should not forget him. The worm should feed sweetly on him. He should be remembered no more, and wickedness should be broken like a tree, for you praise on the barren who do not bear, and he does no good for the widows. And then in verse 24, he says, you know about these evil men? Look at 24. They are exalted for a little while. You can get away with it for a little while. And remember, whatever Job says is true. We need to keep this in mind. Not every word in the book of Job is a thing by which you can build your life. His friends are liars. And what they're saying, you ought not to have any trust at all. But whatever Job says, they are exalted for a little while. But God is going to eventually settle the score. Now, the last verse of the chapter. Now, if it is not so, who will prove me a liar and make my speech worth nothing? Answer me, he's saying. If what I've said is not right, prove that I'm wrong in what I have affirmed. Dave, you had a comment.
We see all this wickedness and everything happening, and we forget that it's God's timeline, not ours.
Yes. You know, God sees the world so different from the way that we see the world and everything, and He sees the big picture, and oftentimes we only see that little problem that's in our lives. Isn't that the case? So now here's Bildad. And Bildad, and I'm glad this chapter is not that very long. In fact, we summed up chapter 25 with one sentence, no one is righteous before God. Bildad stands up and says, dominion and fear belong to Him, to Jehovah God. He makes peace in the high places. Is there any number to His army upon whom His light does not shine? You want to talk about the armies of heaven? God is sovereign. Now, because God is almighty and God is sovereign, how can a mortal be righteous before God? You know the answer to that. For by grace are you saved. Here's this individual who reflects the attitude of the Pharisees that says, if you break one of these commandments, then you're headed straight to hell. And it was their attitude. The Sabbath day's journey was 2,000 steps, and if you went 2,001 steps, your soul was in jeopardy. Nobody can be righteous before God. But you see, we understand grace. Bildad doesn't have a clue in relationship, and he said, how can he be pure who is born of a woman? Even if the moon does not shine and the stars are not pure in his sight, how much less is man? If God is greater than the sun and God is greater than the moon, that's in verse 5, and greater than the stars, how much less is man who is, what word do you have there? You've got worm? I've got the New King James. It's a kind of worm, a maggot. You know, it's a maggot. And a son of man like a worm. Now David in one of the Psalms describes himself as a worm. And so when we sing that song, for such a worm as I, that's a biblical song. Had a New Zealander, an older gentleman when we got to New Zealand, and he would not sing that song. He said, we are God's creation. We ought to, call ourselves a worm. Well, David called himself a worm in one of the Psalms. And so when we'd sing this song, he says, when we get to this part, for such a one as I. And that's in, I think it's at the cross. I believe that. But so Job now gets back up in chapter 26 and he says, how have you helped him who is without power? He's talking about himself. I'm helpless. And would you please tell me how you can help me? Have you counseled anyone who has no wisdom? And how have you declared sound advice to many? Now he's already called them miserable comforters. And to whom have you uttered words and whose spirit came from you? He says in relationship to the sovereign God that the unseen world, Sheol, New Testament word Hades, is naked before him and destruction has no covering. He stretches out the north over the empty space. He hangs the earth upon nothing. How did Job know that? If Job had asked the scholars of his day, or the ancient world, asked the scholars of the ancient world, how did they describe the earth? The Hindu description, the earth is flat, and it rests. Have you ever seen that painting in a drawing? It rests upon the back of a dozen elephants that are maybe one turned in each direction, or on the back of elephants, and the elephants are swimming in the cosmic sea. I don't know what the cosmic sea is resting on in relationship to that. What about Atlas? You remember Atlas and what he held up? Is anybody old enough to remember comic books that had that? Was it a 98-pound weakling or a 96-pound weakling on the back page? You remember that? Comic books, and you could tell, you could call this number. It was back before you did that kind of call in, but if you'd fill out that coupon, and on the back there was a cartoon of this guy who was a little shrimpy guy, and he'd go down to the beach and he'd be beaten up to nothing. Wallace, you remember that? But down to the block, here's this course, the Atlas course of bodybuilding. I've made up that name of it, and there was Atlas, and there's the earth sitting right on his shoulder. Job, how do you know the earth is suspended upon nothing? I mean, we're around the time of Abraham. Shortly after the flood, evidently, is when Job lived, because we know how many years he lived after he'd had all these trials. When we get to the end of this book, the age of Job tells us that he lived 140 years after he'd been through the first 41 chapters of the book of Job. So however old he was, whenever he lost it all, and then you add that to how old he is, because he lives 140 years after that, and all of a sudden you're in that period from the time from Noah to Abraham, when people's life, Noah was 900 years, and then the number just takes a nosedive. And so that's evidently when Job, how did Job know that he hangs the earth upon nothing? You want evidence of the inspiration of the Bible? There's part of it right there. He suspends the earth upon nothing. He covers, verse 9, he covers the face of his throne and spreads his cloud over it. He draws a circular horizon on the face of the waters at the boundary of light and darkness. Isn't that amazing? What light is and even what darkness is. And there is that clear-cut dividing line. And I know we talk about twilight, but have you ever been out walking and there's a beam of light that's coming from a street light, and all of a sudden, man, you take another five steps and you're in pitch black darkness? What is that line there? God stretches out and God makes that boundary between all of these things. You want to look at verse 12? You want to talk about a tidal wave surge? You look at verse 12. He stirs up the sea with his power. And by understanding, he breaks the storm. God is great. I'll grant you that God is great. And then he says in verse 14, indeed, these are the edges of his ways. And how small a whisper we hear of him, but the thunder of his power, who can understand it? If you think about a tornado or a hurricane, And you think about an earthquake, and Job says, that's when God whispers. What's it going to be like when God thunders? I mean, we think, you've been around where lightning struck? Was that ever loud? You know, I mean, it was close and everything. That's God whispering. Dirk, you had a comment. Yeah. You know, I mean, you stop and think about the power of God. And I love the contrast between God whispering and God roaring the thunder. It dawned on me, and it was here, I guess maybe it was one night when David was reading, that there'll be the shout from heaven at the end of time. Can you imagine how loud that shout from heaven is? I just got to thinking about what will that shout from heaven sound like? And that may only be God whispering. And that's what Job says. Said, yeah, I know that God is almighty and God is great. And these are just the mere edges of His ways. I think that'd make a great, great class to teach teenagers. You only see on the outside, you know, like the iceberg. You only see the tip of the iceberg. And in every manifestation of the power of Almighty God, all we've seen is just the extreme edge, and we think we've seen it all. And Job said, no, you haven't. That's just the mere edges of the things that he has. Let's get to chapter 27. Moreover, Job continued his discourse and said, God, as God lives, who has taken away my justice, and the Almighty who has made my soul bitter, as long as my breath is in me and the breath of God is in my nostrils, my lips will not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Does adversity make you bitter? It can, and it really makes ungodly people bitter. But Job said, that's not me. You guys have been accusing me of being an ungodly person. You want to know how I am? Verse 4, my lips will not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Far be it from me that I should say that you are right. You want to talk about political correctness and compromising with political correctness? Job said, I don't live on that street. That's not where I am. You guys, everything you've said. He says in verse 6, my righteousness is what I hold fast, and I will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me as long as I live. May my enemies be like the wicked, and he who rises up against me like the unrighteous. For what is the hope of a hypocrite? I'm telling you, there's many little phrases in here. You could take the book of Job and preach for 3 years. What is the hope of a hypocrite? Though he may gain much, what's his hope if God takes it away? The story about the rich man who died, how much did he leave? And his chauffeur said, I'll tell you. And they said, you know? He said, oh, yeah. Well, how much did he leave? He said, everything. I will tear down my barns. I'll build new barns. And I will say to my soul, eat, drink, and thou hast much goods laid up for many years. And God said, you fool. God's very precise about us forbidding us to call somebody a fool. But God looked at that individual who said he had a bumper crop, and thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Thou fool, this night your soul will be required of you. I think it's interesting. It didn't say your life will be required of you. It's your soul that's in jeopardy. It's not just your life. It's your soul will be required of you. And then shall these things be? And then he said, after calling that man a fool, he includes words that could include us. So is every man that is not rich toward God. What's the hope of the hypocrite? We're in that section, verse 8 through 23, and we talk about the hope of the wicked. Surely all of you have seen it, he says. Well, let's start in verse 11. I will teach you about the hand of God. What is with the Almighty I will not conceal. Surely all of you have seen it. Why then do you believe with complete nonsense? You have seen the wicked prosper, and you've seen it. And now here's somebody else that, and you have no evidence at all. And he says, you know what the portion of the wicked man is with God? And the heritage of the oppressors, you know what they receive from the Almighty God? If his children are multiplied, it's for the sword, and his offspring shall not be satisfied with bread. And verse 16, though he heaps up silver like dust and piles up clothing like clay, he may pile it up, but the just will wear it and the innocent will divide the silver. God dealt with nations in a very physical way in the Old Testament times and took away the possessions of the wicked and gave them to the righteous sometimes. And Job says, you guys know that is true. In reference to the wicked, terror overtakes him like a flood. Can you imagine being an unfaithful Christian and the judgment day comes? There may be some folks that don't know what's happening that day. Can you imagine being on the left hand, being an unfaithful Christian, being on the left hand? Terror overtakes them like a flood. Now, God's going to judge the wicked also. But think of how much motivation there ought to be in our hearts because of what we know about this. You want to be on the left hand or on the right hand? He was talking evidently to individuals, and he said, the least of these my brethren, you need to minister unto them. The east wind carries him away, verse 21, talking about the plight of the wicked, and he's gone. It sweeps him out of his place. It hurls against him and does not spare. He flees desperately from its power. Men shall clap their hands at him and shall hiss him out of his place. And that's what happens to the wicked. There have been individuals that lived their life and gained an abundance. Let's look at this next chapter 28, because Job says, where is wisdom? And I think it's interesting to read chapter 28 and see how far advanced people were. We think that technology and the greatness and wisdom of man has only come about in the last 150 years. Job says, there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined. That's in chapter 28, verse 1. Iron is taken from the earth, and copper is smelted from ore. Man puts an end to darkness. We do a better job than they did when they had oil lamps. But we can overcome the darkness, and searches every recess for in the darkness and the shadow of death. He breaks open a shaft away from the people in places forgotten by feet. They hang far away from men. They swing to and fro. And as for the earth, from it comes bread, but underneath it is turned up as by fire. Yeah, where's food come from? Up on the surface. What's below the surface? Job knew. He hangs the earth upon nothing, and in the heart of the earth is that volcanic molten part of the heart of the earth. And Job affirms that. Now, Job, how'd you figure that out? It's because God revealed things to Job, and he understood it. He says, the stones are the source of sapphires, and it contains gold dust. That path no bird knows, nor has the falcon's eye seen it. The proud lions have not trodden it, nor have the fierce lions passed over it. Man puts his hand on the flint, and he overturns the mountains at the roots. And we do that. We change, we move mountains. Think of the interstate sometimes when you're driving up in the Carolinas and you see where they've cut through all of those mountains. Just stand in utter amazement about that. But, you know, Job is about to say, that's not really wisdom. He cuts out channels in the rocks and his eyes see every precious thing. He dams up the streams from tricklings. And what is hidden he brings forth to light. But where can wisdom be found? All right, you've got all of this stuff, all of this technology and gold and silver and iron and copper and sapphires and brass and bringing light into darkness. Now, is that wisdom? Where is wisdom, he says, and where's the place of understanding? Man does not know its value. Had you rather be a wise, poor, and I'm not talking about spiritual wisdom, had you rather be a wise, poor individual or a rich person who knows nothing? That's the whole argumentation Job has made. Look at the pyramids. Look at all of these things of the ancient world and the marvels of these ancient worlds. You know, and I think it's ironic. They're still trying to figure out how they built those pyramids. You know, there's so many ideas. And over in my lifetime, there have been so many of these ideas. Man does not know the value of wisdom, nor is it wisdom found in the land of the living. The depths of the ocean says, it's not in me. And the sea says, it's not with me. You cannot purchase wisdom with gold, nor can silver be weighed for its price. If you had all the gold of Ophir, which was a place where that was known for gold in biblical times, in precious onyx or sapphire, neither gold nor crystal can equal wisdom, nor can it be exchanged for jewelry of fine gold. Verse 19, the topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. Next question, verse 20. Then where does it come from? Man knows a lot. Where does wisdom come from? It's hidden, verse 31, from the eyes of all the living and concealed from the birds of the air. Isn't it remarkable to you that we have 9 Supreme Court justices and thousands of justices, judges all over this land who cannot define pornography? And any mother of a teenage boy knows what it is. You know how wise you are? Do you know the value of gold and silver? I'm talking about its true value. Is that wisdom? Yeah. Where did it come from? Where did you learn that? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I know I tell Brother Keeble's story, and I know I've told this story here, but there's some who've not heard this story from Brother Keeble. He says a man gets his PhD and he thinks he knows everything. And he gets all puffed up, you know, and he says he doesn't really understand anything. Brother Keeble says, science tells us that the human body is 90% water. That's why when you create somebody, you get a little urn full of ashes. That's all there is of you other than otter. Well, water, I mean. There may be a lot of hot air that gets out also. But he says, you're 90% water. And the Bible tells us that the Lord formed man of the dust of the ground. Brother Keeple said, if you mix dust and water together, you know what you get? That man with that PhD, Brother Keeble said, he ain't nothing but a mud ball with a necktie on. And that's true. And I'm not mocking education. I wish we'd get as much of it as we could. Price Billingsley, Joe, you remember Price Billingsley? I think you heard Price Billingsley preach when you were growing up many times. Price Billingsley said this, "I want my brethren to get as much education as they possibly can." Education is wonderful. "And I want my brethren to get as much as they possibly can so that they can know how little it's actually worth. I had rather my children learn their ABCs in heaven as to be able to curse God fluently in seven languages on this earth." Now, Joel, you heard that man preach. I never heard him preach. I read that book that he wrote. I read it about every 2 or 3 years. In fact, I've got 4 copies. I've got 4 children. And over these years, I've stolen 4 books. Didn't steal them, but I've made sure that I want my children to have that book that Price Billingsley wrote. Why? Because there's wisdom. And that's exactly what Job is trying to say. You understand death? You understand the blessing of suffering? Do you understand the worth of Christian values and the worth of a Christian wife and a Christian husband? You understand all of these things? John, you had a comment a moment ago. Isn't it amazing, John? We look at as a young man at life, and now as we've gotten older, I'm a lot farther down that road than you are, and you look back and you think, why was that so important to me? One of the missionaries borrowed my car, let his wife drive it, and she had a wreck in my little Volkswagen. And Eddie was looking in his rearview mirror and saw his wife smash and tear up at my Volkswagen. And he said, "I ran back to that car, and I didn't give one thought at all to your car." How important is a car? Gary and Jonathan, way back yonder, were going on a church outing, and they had a car wreck going to the church outing. I was attending the gospel meeting up at Stewart, and they called me and said, "Dad, we've had a wreck." And I'm sure they had imagined what my response would be. And I never ask about the car. You know how little that car is worth? It's the only new car I've ever owned, by the way. And Jonathan and Gary tore it up. You know, that's amazing. It's not worth anything. And that's what he's saying. Gold and silver and all of this stuff. And you cannot figure out the value of wisdom. How about this statement? And Dirk, you may help me on this. To establish a weight for the wind. How much does wind weigh? How much the air that's on this earth, how much pressure is there down on the earth from the weight of air? 14.7 pounds, right? You don't think about air having weight. How did Job know that air had weight? Now, we know we've got the technology to pull that out. And I like verse 16, and that is, there is a law for the rain. Sometimes I think weather forecasters wish there were, you know, that scattered showers. You know, have scattered showers this afternoon and tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. And a high of 85 and a low of 69. And we'll have 78 the next day and 68 the next day. They've got the easiest forecasting job there is. And boy, don't they get excited when they see that hurricane coming? You know, the law of the rain. I think God has made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt. Then he saw wisdom and declared, he prepared indeed, he searched it out. And to man he said, "Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom." That's not just in Proverbs, is it? Job, what is wisdom? Tell me what wisdom is. The fear of the Lord. that is wisdom.